Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Nolan from Past Gas by Donut Media. We are the world's number one automotive podcast, and this week it's part two of our series on Nissan, our conclusion of the Nissan story. We're talking about all the iconic Nissan sports cars in this episode. I'm talking Z-Car. How'd that even come to be? It turns out the guy responsible for it developed it in secret and then had to act surprised when the engineers showed it off for the rest of the company leadership. Very funny. And then, of course, Skyline GTR, Datsun 510. A little car called Godzilla. They're all in this episode. Check it out wherever you get your podcasts. It's part two of Nissan by Past Gas by Donut Media. Listen today.
Big thanks to Indeed for sponsoring this episode of Past Gas. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PastGas. Just go to Indeed.com/PassGas right now to support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/PassGas. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
August 1958, Nissan ad man Yutaka Katayama, known to most as Mr. K, is in Sydney, Australia, leading a two-car team of Datsun 210s in the brand's first official motorsport event. And to say Mr. K was out of his depth was an understatement. He had never led a racing team before, and the event before them was a grueling 9,924-mile circumnavigation of the continent on mostly unpaved roads. The brand had gotten its start barely 20 years ago when a relative of Mr. K, Yoshisuke Aikawa, bought the faltering Dot brand and, in a complex series of business moves, incorporated the cars it now called Datsuns under a new automotive manufacturer known as Nissan. The team was in Australia to build brand recognition for an impending global expansion. It was a huge gamble. A poor finish could poison the brand's image abroad before their cars even reached the docks. The company's fate outside of Japan hung in the balance over the next 19 days as the small 1,000cc sedan crisscrossed the outback. How are the histories of Datsun and Nissan intertwined? How did Yoshisuke Aikawa's leadership turn Japan into an automotive manufacturing powerhouse? And how did Mr. K revolutionize automotive advertising and bring prestige and recognition to Nissan and Datsun worldwide? Today on Past Gas, the first in a two-part series on Datsun.
Past Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about ports.
Yes.
Yes.
Finally, something for me.
Yeah. Finally, yes. Something with some yes. Joe meat on the yeah. bone. I ate meat off of a bone with Joe this weekend.
Yeah.
We had ribs.
Ribs, brisket,
chicken,
pork.
Lots of meat, lots of bones. I finished that meat yesterday.
Nice. I was hoping you would.
At like 2 p.m. And then as I was going to bed later, I burped and tasted it. And I said, that's too long.
Yeah, it's some stuff just sticks around
just
for
sticks
a while.
Around for yeah. a long time.
We got Justin today.
Yeah, Nolan hey. Is in Colorado getting his life together. He's visiting his sister. And we are joined by Justin Freeman.
What's your catchphrase, man?
What's your catchphrase, dude?
Oh, man. I wish you guys had told me before.
Oh, that's a good one,
Oh,
dude.
That's a... You're telling us that you don't listen to the podcast.
I can see that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I wasn't prepared. I'm sorry. Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Okay, that's a good one.
And then, as always, the light of my life, the third vertebrate to my backbone, Joe... The Web Weber.
Hey, what's up? Keep it juiced.
Nice. Love hearing that. All right, dudes. Datsun.
Yeah.
One of the best car brands.
I think we think of Nissan as one thing nowadays,
mm-hmm.
but back in the day, they made so many cool cars.
So many cool cars.
and
they still do, like the Frontier, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you, X.
Yeah. You have a Nissan, right, Joe?
I do have a Nissan.
Z31.
I got a Z31, 1984, 300ZX.
Yeah.
It's a non-turbo. It makes 165 horsepower.
Oh, that's
which
great.
Means it runs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got it a great deal on it.
Screaming
this is the second
deal.
Z31 that I've had. I used to have a Shiro Special 1988 turbo. Everything was white. And I was so scared to drive it because it was pretty clean.
It sucks having a car that's too nice.
Yeah. This one, I paid $800 for. I whip it around. I don't care if it breaks. It's so much more freeing having a bad car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So your car came out right at the beginning of Datsun being called Nissan.
Yes. It's actually got a Datsun badge and a Nissan badge
on
the back, which is really
that
cool.
Is
a little Easter egg. This is the second Z31 I've had. Do you ever have cars where people just send you, like you have it one time
mm-hmm.
and then people are like, oh, you must want another one.
Yeah.
This is your identity.
Yeah. This is totally. Your identity. It worked out for this time because it was such a good deal for me, but, I don't see myself as like a Z31 guy.
You are now. You've owned
you
two,
now.
Dude.
You have to.
This is going to turn into an SVX situation.
Yep. Yep. Someone will offer you one for free.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, damn.
I guess I need a part car.
Yeah. I'm looking at, so the E30 is currently under the knife.
Yeah.
And after this, there's like no more parts to buy.
Mm. Yeah.
Like I was really like racking my brain, like being like, oh, what else could I put on it? And there's just like everything's been addressed. So naturally, I am looking at other cars.
Yeah.
And I would love to do like a Datsun 510 or a 240Z
ooh,
or something.
Ooh. 510 would be sick.
510 would be sick, but it's square, much like the E30.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm leaning more towards something flowy. Like
it'd be funny to turn a 510 into like a fat pig.
A big old fat pig, like a wide.
Just the red fat pig livery.
Oh, yeah.
With like wide wheels.
Red pig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Red pig. That's it. Yeah.
The Mercedes. Anyway, Datsun, more responsible than any other brand for the, for people liking Japanese cars in America.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really just made a huge impact in the 70s. Kind of gave us an option when the gas crisis hit and just stuck around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited to jump in part one of our two-part series on the history of Datsun. Yoshisuke Akawa was born to a wealthy and powerful family on November 6th, 1880.
Dang.
That's he was old when this started.
Yeah, he friggin' like Abe Lincoln was still alive.
Huh? No, I don't think so.
No.
1865.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there's the John Wilkes Booth show right now on Apple.
Who plays him?
A guy from Masters of the Sky. But the guy who rented John Wilkes Booth, his horse, was named J.W. Pumphrey. And the Pumphrey cousins chat is like, he's in the show! they have a guy playing J.W. Pumphrey, and then there's a store that says, like, J.W. Pumphrey.
That's funny as hell.
On it, yeah.
Is that an ancestor of yours?
Yeah.
Legitimately? Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
John Wilkes Booth stole the horse from him.
Oh, stole the horse.
Well, he rented it. He wasn't, like, in on it.
Yeah.
He was just, like, it was, like, a car rental
situation where he's like, yeah, I'll rent you this horse. And then he like stole it.
Yeah.
So we were not down with
you're not complicit.
No.
All right.
His father hailed from a local lord type family, which served the Choshu clan, who were his mother's family and had helped overthrow the military government that had ruled over the country for over 2.5 centuries.
Whoa.
Damn, this dude sick. My dad worked at restaurants. Both sides of his family had come to wield significant influence in Japan's Meiji government, and the combination of their wealth and influence meant that Aikawa was set up for success for whichever career path he decided to follow. Though he was initially under pressure to enter politics, his grandmother encouraged him to explore other options like engineering, which Aikawa developed a passion for.
That's a cool grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
After graduating from Yamaguchi High School in the late 1800s, he enrolled in a degree program at the machinery section of the engineering department of Tokyo Imperial University around the turn of the century. While at the university, he came down with a serious illness that some sources describe as being nearly fatal.
Oh.
This supposed near-death experience shaped his outlook on life in a permanent way and led him to live a minimalist, strict, and focused life often described as Spartan. It was also what ultimately drove him to manufacturing, which was said to give him purpose.
Even if you were super rich back then, you were not immune to
diseases and stuff.
And flus and stuff, which
totally.
Yeah.
I mean, Steve Jobs died.
Because he ate fruit like an idiot.
Yeah, don't eat fruit. don't eat fruit.
Don't only eat fruit.
Well, yeah, you can't be a fruitarian. That's also what the godmother... Did you watch that documentary? The eater.
Well, she also drank like a handle of vodka every day.
And colloidal silver. But also Ashton Kutcher... He was trying to like do method acting for the Steve Jobs movie. And he only ate fruit and he got like... what is it?
Pancreatitis.
Yeah, but that's like Steve Jobs got pancreas cancer.
Huh.
It's like, didn't you read about him before you started doing the same mistakes?
And also, no one is going to clock that you're eating fruit. That doesn't really help with like method acting.
Also, you're just Kelso and punked. In the early 1900s, while attending a graduate course, Aikawa took a job as a mechanic at a company that would eventually become Toshiba to learn more about manufacturing and to improve his technical skills. A short while later, he moved to the United States to work at Gould Kupler Company.
Whoa.
To further expand his knowledge of malleable cast iron, a product he realized would be important to the growth of Japan's industrial sector.
That's such an undercover boss kind of setup. Like this dude with so much power, just like, oh, I'm gonna go work in the.
It's like when
in the mines.
Kim Jong Un went to like Switzerland to go to high school. He's like, I like Dennis Rodman.
In both instances, Aikawa concealed his family background and education to immerse himself in the life of the average worker on the factory floor.
It is undercover boss.
Yeah
totally.
Whoa,
literally.
Over the next few years, Aikawa traveled back and forth between Japan and the U.S., and it was around this time that the automobile began to take hold of his future plans. He spent much of his time in Detroit and witnessed the boom spurred by the automakers like Ford and became convinced that cars were the future. Aikawa realized that Japan needed a robust, homegrown automotive industry to combat the imported vehicles from the U.S. and Europe that were coming to fill Japanese roads. This is kind of a theme. We heard this with Mazda, too.
Coming to fill?
No. Japanese industrial guys being like, hey, these cars are pretty cool. Yeah. We're not making any of them. We should.
Yeah.
Because right now they're just all foreign cars.
We're really missing out on this opportunity.
Yeah. What's going to happen if we go to war with these guys in a couple of years? In the coming decades, he would ultimately see that goal through with a company called Nissan and small cars called Datsuns. Pass Gas will be right back. Commercial time.
Big thanks to Shopify for sponsoring this episode of Pass Gas. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you're cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business.
from the launch your little online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way up to did we just hit 500,000 orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. What I love about Shopify is that it gives you control over how you grow your business. This is the kind of tool that I'm looking for if I'm going to start a business. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gas, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gas now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gas. Thanks, Shopify.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
It's worth noting that the origins of Datsun and Nissan are largely inseparable and somewhat complicated and corporate. But it all began with a company known as Quanshinsha Motor Car Works. Founded in 1911 by Masujiro Hashimoto in Tokyo, the company began as a small workshop and after a few years of development released their first car in March 1914. The small open-top 32-horsepower two-cylinder car was called the DAT, or DATGO, which got its name by taking the initials of the company's three investors' last names.
That thing go.
That thing nice. Go.
I was going like 6 miles per hour.
Oh, that's
the fastest speed I've ever seen.
Go, dude.
It's 1890.
Race me, bro. Race me.
So it got its name from the initials of the company's three investors' last names, which were Kenjiro Den, Rokuro Aoyama, and Meitaro Takeuchi.
Like Zakoyama?
Oh, yeah. It means like mountain.
Oh, tight.
Yeah.
He part told of, you part that? Of that. It means mountain.
Oyama means big mountain.
Oh, maybe, hell yeah, dude.
That's what they call me.
They call me the big mountain.
The big mountain.
And Meitaro Takeuchi. As one of the first Japanese made and designed cars, the DAT was a pioneer in Japan's domestic auto industry. But consumers were slow to adopt the new technology. Within a few years, Quanshinsha was struggling and turned to the slightly more lucrative utility vehicle market with industrial-oriented trucks like the DAT 41.
DAT 41.
Oh, DAT 41.
I don't want to waste my time becoming another casualty.
On riding horses and... that guy looks real bad now.
Does he?
Him? Yeah, I feel
well, he
bad
just
for him.
Kept the same hair.
That's his hair is his least...
yeah.
The least of his worries. Aikawa had seen the writing on the wall and was hesitant to join the shaky industry. In 1910, at age 30, he established Tobata Imono Casting Co., a metalworks operation known today as Hitachi Metals.
Oh.
Do you know that?
Well, Hitachi.
Oh,
Hitachi,
yeah.
Hitachi, yeah.
Do they make microwaves?
Make lots of stuff.
Electronics.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he waited for a more opportune time to begin manufacturing automobiles. He was right to wait. Through the mid-1920s, demand for passenger vehicles continued to plummet and auto companies, including Quanshinsha, were virtually bankrupt. In order to save themselves from bankruptcy and to keep their operations afloat, Quanshinsha merged with Jitsuyo Jidosha, one of Japan's most successful truck manufacturers, and rebranded DAT as Jidosha Saizo in 1926. The founding of Nissan and Datsun was set in motion. In 1928, Aikawa's Tobata Casting was bought by an alien holding company named Kuhara Kogyo, whose board pleaded with Aikawa to lead the company out of financial trouble. Aikawa initially refused, but eventually agreed. He began restructuring the company and changed the name to Nihon Sangyo. And finally, in 1930, he saw an opening to make Japan a true automotive giant. That year, the Japanese Ministry of Commerce and Industry began a push to promote the growth of the domestic auto market and for everyday Japanese citizens to become car owners, something they encouraged by making it legal to operate vehicles with engines smaller than 500cc without a driver's license.
All I'm thinking is like, don't make the same mistakes we did. Oh. Everyone should have a car. You should have a car. You should have a car. Then you become reliant on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that why it's called Reliant Robin?
No.
Oh.
No.
Because it's easily relied on?
Reliant Robins were made for children to drive.
Yeah.
Really?
It was like a three-wheel moped that had a body.
It was made for children to drive to the mines.
Yeah. So you drop your parents
to the coal mines because we were there like, well, the kids are so good at working in the mines, they need a car to drive to work.
To get there, yeah.
And so they made a tiny little car for kids to drive.
That's bleak.
And plus, they're the only ones light enough to not make it tip over.
Oh, my God. Uh-huh.
Justin and I drove one.
Yeah.
And you tipped it, right?
It was scary as soon as I got out.
I tipped it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Real bad.
Well, because I was driving all day with Justin in the passenger seat.
Yeah.
And
so you're used to the physics.
So I was used to the physics of it. And then Gabe, one of our camera guys, got in, and he weighs probably 50 pounds less than Justin.
Yeah.
I would say 100.
Maybe 100 pounds less than Justin. And I went around the same turn at the same speed and tipped the car
over. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Aikawa, now 51, moved quickly. Rather than start a company from scratch, he decided it would be more efficient and economical to purchase an existing manufacturer.
Another buyout.
I know. Yeah, and then we merged names. A few months later, in 1931, he closed a deal for Nihon Sangyo to buy DAT Jidosha and crafted a plan for the brand to re-enter the passenger car market.
Dude, this is like the Old Testament. This is...
Yeah.
Yeah. Then Abraham begat
Nihon Sangyo begat DAT Jidosha.
Dude, I mentioned the Old Testament in our last podcast.
You've been reading
today.
The Bible a lot, huh?
I'm just really into the Bible, dude.
Yeah. I think it's going to make the bestseller list this year. Aikawa and the DAT team worked tirelessly to get a car to market. Aikawa leaned heavily on a man named William Gorham, an American who had lived in Japan for over a decade, and his expertise in American auto manufacturing to get the new division off the ground. At Gorham's request, Aikawa imported the latest auto manufacturing technology from the United States, which introduced a wide range of manufacturing technologies to the country for the very first time. Barely a year later, in 1932, the project was finished. The result was a 495cc compact car called the Type 1, which was launched under the name Datsun, as in the son of Dat, and it's spelled S-O-N, not
S-U-N.
S-U-N.
Yeah.
Though initially launched in limited numbers, the Datsuns quickly gained notoriety with Japanese consumers for making a several hundred mile long publicity drive from Osaka to Tokyo on Japan's dirt and stone roads without issue.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Whoa. Whoa.
Except for your butt hurting.
Yeah.
You're the issue.
Yeah.
Turns out they like gaslighting.
The burgeoning Japanese middle class was happy to buy a homegrown alternative to a foreign mark. In 1933, the Datsun brand began to ramp up production at a new state-of-the-art factory in Yokohama, an event that Nissan considers to be its official beginning. That same year, Datsun also dropped the O in its name and replaced it with a U, which it is now, which served to pay homage to the country, the land of the rising sun.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, that all makes sense. All right,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I always thought it was the dot sun with like their flag.
Yeah. Dot sun.
That's what I always thought.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's not, though.
It's not. It's dat.
Happy coincidence.
Dat.
Yeah. And this was also to rid themselves of the negative association with the word son, which sounded similar to the word meaning loss or disadvantage in Japanese.
Oh, okay. Mm.
Wait, I'm about to have a son.
Damn, you're about to lose all your money.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
However, despite the growing Datsun automobile division, Nihon Sangyo private investors spoke out against the expansion of auto manufacturing, seeing it as nothing more than a passing trend and waste of company resources.
Wait, they still think cars are a waste at this point?
Cars are just a passing trend.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love you, horse.
Where do I put the hay in?
Do they have horses until Western people came?
Shoguns had horses and stuff.
Mad horses, dude.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
China has horses, so I would imagine horses came over at
some point.
Yeah. Hmm. Rather than cede to their demands,
Jumbai Atai means horse and rider are one.
Oh, that's what the Toyota.
It's Mazda.
Oh, Mazda.
Yeah.
Dude, good pull.
Comes from archers.
Yeah.
Yeah. See those dudes hanging off of their horses, shooting bows?
Yeah.
Joe Rogan posted a picture of one this weekend on his Insta.
Really?
On his story. Yeah.
Nice. You follow
sick
him?
Looking, huh?
You follow him?
Of course.
Got to keep ahead of the trends.
So rather than cede to the old guys that don't think cars are the future, Aikawa bought them outright and then took the company public.
Shut up.
Yeah. Let's let the people.
I've literally been waiting
decide.
For this.
Yeah. Shortly thereafter, he decided to change the auto division's name, deciding it would be more recognizable if it matched Nihon Sangyo's ticker name on the Tokyo Stock Exchange, which was listed as NISAN or Nissan.
Oh, there we go.
Wow.
From then on, Datsun's parent company has been known as Nissan, and the stories of both companies have been inseparable.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah. It's a like weird kind of just like
abbreviation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More of that story right after this. We got to pay the bills.
Big thanks to Indeed for sponsoring this episode of Pass Gas. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. In my opinion, one of the best things about Indeed is that everything is all in one place. They have so many different tools that work together to help you find the person you're looking for. And as someone who hires writers pretty regularly, I think this is a great platform. And guess what? Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/passgas. Just go to Indeed.com/passgas right now to support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/passgas. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From 1935 to 1937, Nissan's annual output of Datsun's cars nearly tripled to over 10,000 absolute units. Though the company was still small, its strengths lay in the ability to be innovative in multiple areas, including advertising. Datsun ads in the 1930s pioneered techniques considered modern even by today's standards. They were doing mostly influencer programs.
Whoa.
JK. And helped establish Datsun as a desirable brand. All of those advertising accolades were thanks to a man named Yutaka Katayama, more commonly known as Mr. K.
Mr. K.
Mr. K.
Sounds like a cereal.
Uh-huh. Mr. K.
Yeah, like a like Kmart it's brand a business, cereal.
It's a businessman cereal.
Yeah, yeah. It's got flax.
It's got a lot. And caffeine.
You don't need all that sugar.
Flax, caffeine.
Flax, caffeine, and nicotine. Mr. K.
Just a bunch of Zins. In a bowl.
Yeah. Born on September 15th, 1909, Mr. K had a tremendous impact on the company after joining Nissan in 1935 at the age of 26.
Whoa.
His interest in joining the automotive business came from none other than Aikawa, who was a relative of his and had invited him to join the company once he finished his degree at Keio University.
Mr. K described his choice to join Nissan and the automotive sector in general as unconventional and said, quote, "At the time, talented people would join a bank or go somewhere else after graduating from school. Back then, no one had even heard of a car company. They just assumed it was a transport company." Which is wild. But for Mr. K...
And this is 1935.
Yeah,
like, this is pretty deep into cars.
Yeah. Or, I mean...
Yeah.
You're on a small island, you know.
That's true.
Do you really need all that?
Yeah. The streets are really skinny.
Horses are still all the rage. They're still making new horses.
Yeah. Bigger, better horses.
Their roads stronger, probably faster. Aren't paved.
Hay is getting super cheap.
Yeah, hay is super cheap.
They haven't hit like the hay crisis yet.
Yeah, well, they're producing more hay than ever. But for Mr. K, who had developed a reputation throughout his career for being unconventional himself, it was a perfect fit. He described the environment as harmonious, welcoming, and like a family gathering of juggalos. This familial atmosphere in 1938, he's like, this is like hanging with juggalos, dude. It's familial. This familial atmosphere gave Mr. K room to be creative and experiment with new ideas. Over time, as Nissan grew and the company became more structured, Mr. K's out-of-the-box thinking would grate on company executives, but it would continuously prove to be an invaluable asset. Mr. K says he was, quote, "initially hired to something like a sales department and soon realized that the best way to improve sales was to advertise. He proposed an idea that was radical for advertising in the 1930s. Rather than repeating a car's name over and over, as was the convention at the time,
Model T, smoke.
He suggested Nissan should promote their cars as a lifestyle and incorporate the use of celebrities.
That's so what they do now.
Yeah, he did do influencer marketing.
Yeah.
All
that's
right.
So funny.
One of the GTRs had celebrities on it, right? The Ken Mary. It was Ken and Mary.
Oh, yeah. Well, they weren't.
Were they? No, they were just normal.
Two guys.
They were
characters they invented because I think they were like, what are Americans named?
Yeah.
Like, Ken, I guess Ken and Mary.
And Mary. Having exceeded the bounds of his original job description, he was reassigned to General Affairs as a one-man advertising department.
Wow.
He first contacted Japanese actress Takiko Mizunoe, one of the biggest celebrities in Japan at the time, to appear in ads and at auto shows with Datsun cars.
Because you know her.
Yeah.
That's why we put her in our ad.
Yeah, you know her. Datsun.
Datsun. It works too, though.
It does work.
Yeah.
He then secured a deal to supply vans to the prestigious Mitsukoshi department store to transport their merchandise. Nice. This guy was probably fancy. Pretty cool, pretty fancy guy.
He's a family friend of a highborn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's probably got some slick suits. Probably owns multiple hats. Probably has shoes with spats on them. Probably a real just swinging cat, you know?
Yeah, he probably...
Yeah, he's probably cool as hell, dude.
He's probably like the John DeLorean of the day.
Yeah, one of them.
DeLorean of Japan.
Yeah, I picture him being more fey. Like, more like, just kind of like... DeLorean...
It's simple.
Yeah.
It's simple, man. Just advertise, right?
Despite a slow start, the advertisements were paying dividends by 1937. Production numbers of Datsun cars were soaring, and the Datsun Type 14s and 15s of the era...
S14, S15?
These are sick.
Yeah, these
look like Dick Tracy cars.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Whoa!
Yeah.
These are cool.
That is
that
sick.
That coupe is crazy.
It's very American inspired.
That 14 looks to be like the same color that they used on like 240Zs.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And the Datsun Type 14 and 15s of the era were now widely considered to be the first mass-produced cars in Japan. In 1937, Nissan also released a full-color film advertisement shot by Mr. K himself, predating the widespread adoption of color film by Hollywood.
This dude's a real renaissance man.
Dude, this guy's Andy Warhol.
Yeah.
This higher society image also enabled the company to launch a second car brand that focused on larger vehicles. The new brand,
simply called Nissan, launched its first car, the American-sized, luxury-oriented Type 70, in 1937. Whoa, this thing's
that's a
awesome.
Dick Tracy car.
Soft top. Dude.
And prune, can you imagine Prune Face driving that?
Prune Face? Yeah, dude. This thing's
yellow
sick.
Top, yellow paint, yeah. Yellow wheels.
Yeah.
Nice.
Until the early 80s, the company followed this basic structure in Japan. Nissan, the automotive parent company, would make midsize and larger vehicles marketed as Nissans and smaller vehicles marketed as Datsuns.
Oh.
But as the 1930s came to a close, the color film, celebrity-driven version of the brand would give way to the needs of Imperial Japan, which had entered full-scale war with China in 1937 and had occupied Manchuria since 1931.
Yeah, there's always war in these stories.
Well, it's always like the same war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
The world one.
Yep.
Beginning in 1938, Nissan began producing trucks, planes, and engines for the army, and even built a new factory in Manchuria that would serve as their primary manufacturing center through the end of World War II.
Hey, at least they started with cars and then started making planes.
Yeah.
Know? A lot of them were like, oh, the war's done, and we have all these planes we can't do anything with. Yeah. What are people doing nowadays?
Yeah.
Oh, they're flying planes, but on the ground.
Whoa.
We just make some ground planes.
F1 cars are basically planes for the ground.
Mm-hmm. F1 cars are like nicer than most planes.
If you flip an F1 car upside down, it'll lift.
Yeah, that's true.
Ask George Russell.
That's what Driver 61's trying to do right now.
Is he?
He's trying to drive upside down in a tunnel in an F1 car. Hey, I hope he does it.
Me too.
Go for him.
Aikawa, who once rejected the political path taken by so many of his family members, became more and more politically active throughout the end of the 1930s.
That's what happens when you get old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, I know better Fox than everyone News.
Else. Screaming at the TV.
Yeah. Feeling that he had succeeded in his goal of establishing Japan as a major automotive manufacturing country, he resigned from his position as president of Nissan in 1939. Aikawa then settled into the less demanding role of company chairman and set out to pursue a political career.
So he ended up doing what his family wanted him to do in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, no, his family
wanted him to move into politics, and then his grandma was
politics
like,
and banks.
Yeah.
I thought his grandma wanted him to do engineering.
His grandma wanted him to look at other stuff.
Yeah.
But it was expected from his family that he would just be like a politician.
Yeah. Because rich people know what's good for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. We all agree.
Yeah. In 1943, he was elected as a member of the House of Peers, known today as the House of Counselors, in the upper house of the Japanese Diet. Throughout the war, Nissan continued to produce for the military, and by 1943, its parent company, Nihon Sangyo, was the fourth largest conglomerate in the nation. That same year, after becoming a member of government, Aikawa set up a foundation financed by Nissan to send financial assistance to small and medium-sized businesses that didn't receive the same wartime funding as farming and heavy industry, as he believed that they were the foundation of Japan. That's a quote.
So like passenger cars.
Yeah.
Or just like he invested heavily in industry that wasn't like big, like farming and heavy industry stuff. So like, I think this is like the beginning. Like Japan is known for making a bunch of stuff
very well.
So like, this is like the beginning of that. So like this guy kind of like the reason when we think of TVs, we think of Japan, or like when we think of electronics, we think of Japan, is because they invested heavily in smaller industry.
Right. Instead of just taking buyouts and
or like nice jeans.
Yeah.
Like salvage textiles, salvage
food,
jeans.
Probably.
Yeah. A lot of the good stuff comes from Japan.
A lot of good stuff. It's because they focus on specificity and specialization
and craft.
And craft. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unlike the current trend in America.
Yeah.
Boeing.
Just make more.
Yeah, make more of them.
After Japan surrendered on September 2nd, 1945, Allied occupation forces seized Nissan-owned factories, and Aikawa was arrested under suspicion of Class A war crimes.
Ooh.
So we skipped over a couple of things.
Class A, huh?
Yeah, that's It's the top of the class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was held in custody at Sugamo Prison for 20 months before being acquitted.
Damn.
After his release, he purchased a commercial bank to provide the economic assistance he had during the war.
Full
to
circle.
Small and medium-sized businesses, this time in the form of loans.
Yeah.
So now he's like, I'm out of prison. Let's do some predatory loans.
I'm just going to buy a bank.
Yeah.
Could you imagine that now? Like, imagine if, like, Elon had been to jail and this goes, I'm buying a bank now.
Well, the difference is we just don't send rich guys to jail anymore.
That's true.
They just break the law.
The best we can get is, like, Shkreli going to jail for 7 years.
Yeah.
He's out now, though.
Yeah, he's out, though. As we've discussed before, immediately after the war, material was in short supply. Nissan was only allowed to resume production at a single factory, where they returned to making Datsun passenger cars, trucks, and buses until finally in 1949, after a couple years, all post-war production restrictions for automobile production were lifted. Despite the lifted restrictions, Nissan was still short on financial resources to pour into developing and modernizing its car lineup and was forced to turn the companies abroad to catch up. In 1952, they entered a partnership with UK-based Austin Motor Company, which allowed them to produce rebadged Austins such as the 1955 Datsun 110. This thing's sick.
Wow.
I love that big mini.
Yeah, it looks look like a big mini.
An old version of the Rivian R3.
Oh, look at that.
Even
that
color. Size. But it was Mr. K's unconventional problem solving that marked the company's recovery and evolution into the Nissan that we know today. According to Mr. K, as production was increasing in the mid-1950s, he realized that Nissan needed to do more to drum up excitement about their cars, other than doing print ads and TV commercials.
And he noticed that takeovers were becoming a big trend, so he invented the G35.
One day, he came across a foreign magazine detailing an auto show in the U.S. He realized that this was what Japan's auto industry needed. At the time, the standard for showcasing new models was done by company presidents at independent events. Mr. K states that when he initially called his rivals' publicity departments to gauge their interest in hosting a motor show together, they were incredulous and insisted that they were better off leaving it to their own marketing teams.
Oh, that's dumb.
Yeah, but Mr. K, now in his mid-40s, was persistent and managed to plead, argue, and politic all of Japan's major manufacturers into giving the show a chance. And in 1954, the first All-Japan Motor Show, later known as the Tokyo Mobility Show, was underway.
Cool.
The show exceeded expectations and attracted over 500,000 visitors.
Imagine being so wrong about that.
Yeah. 500,000 people?
Right.
That's crazy. 500,000 people.
That's wild. Nuts.
That's so many people?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, turns out they are excited about this.
Yeah. It's often credited for jump-starting the motorization of Japan and the global reach of the Japanese auto industry. Good job, dude.
Yeah.
Should bring back world fairs.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Dude.
Like, get people excited about stuff again.
Yeah, dude. Well, CES.
Is that still going on?
But, like, world fairs used to be like the Olympics, where they, like, developed the city that it was going to.
And they're like, here's the brand new ice cream cone.
Yeah, that's how we got the Eiffel Tower, right? It was a world fair. Yeah. And then it was just like, just leave it.
Yeah. This new invention's called pancakes.
Whoa.
Whoa. It's a cake you can eat in the morning. Now I feel bad about it.
I would eat a pancake.
Belgium
right now.
Goes, hey. Yeah. Hey. We have this.
Sales continue to climb for the next few years. Nissan felt it was time to send the Datsun name abroad after realizing the small sedans and trucks could fill a gap in the Australian and American markets. Mm. While looking ahead to full-scale exports into both countries, Mr. K felt that Datsun could get attention from competing in a race and took it upon himself to make it happen. A Datsun had yet to compete in an official motorsport event with manufacturer support, and his choice for their first, the 1958 Round Australian Trial, was an audacious one. The event took place over 19 days on mostly unpaved 9,942-mile route that essentially circumvented the continent of Australia.
A 10,000-mile race,
dude.
I wouldn't do that in a modern car in Australia.
Yeah.
Do they still do this?
I wouldn't do that in most planes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
The 34 horsepower, 1000cc Datsun 210 was selected for the event. The team believed the small sedan could finish the race, but winning it or even competing for a top spot, well, that was another story. The car had a number of challenges to contend with on top of the demanding route. This included carrying heavy spare parts due to a lack of dealership network in the country, something that Mr. K compared to asking the car to make the drive with 8 passengers.
Whoa.
So there weren't any dealerships, so it had to carry all its own parts.
Well, that was back when people weighed as much as one tire without the wheel.
Yeah.
The two cars, nicknamed Fuji for Mount Fuji and Sakura for Cherry Blossoms, set out from Sydney on August 20th, 1958. Over the course of the next 19 days, the Datsun team trekked across the remote roads of Australia, covering an average of 523 miles a day.
That's a lot.
Against the odds, this rookie team took home the 1000cc and underclass win and were shockingly within striking distance of taking an overall win.
Whoa. Whoa.
The Datsun team had put up incredible effort despite significant disadvantages. Mr. K later said that the car that took the overall victory, the Volkswagen 1200 Beetle, was, quote, not a sturdy car at all. So how on earth could such a car have won the rally?
That's not even a sturdy car.
That car's not even sturdy, dude. The answer is that Volkswagen made use of its dealer network, which was established throughout Australia, and deployed service teams at every single point. Mechanics on hand to change the oil, replace parts, and make adjustments and repairs.
So they had just a race team.
They had support.
Yeah.
But the small Datsun had accomplished its main goal, gaining worldwide attention. The Datsun brand was primed to expand. The 210s that had won the Australian rally spearheaded the brand's U.S. debut and the Datsun 310 at the LA Auto Show in 1958. Datsun had developed somewhat of a cult following in the U.S. throughout the 1950s, primarily due to American servicemen importing the cars they bought while stationed in Japan. But in 1959, Datsun dealers were popping up all over the U.S., and Datsun had begun full-scale exporting to the U.S.
Only 13 years after the war.
Yeah, and that's where we'll pick up next week. Nissan and Datsun, in just a few short decades, had changed the Japanese and global auto industry forever, thanks to the future-minded and innovative natures of Yoshisuke Akawa and Mr. K. Akawa had spearheaded the revival of DOT passenger cars, imported innovative technologies to the country, and made Japan a major player in automotive manufacturing. Akawa spent his later years serving the Japanese Diet, including time as the chairman of the Road Planning Research Committee, through which the country planned its modern automobile infrastructure, a top economic advisor to the prime minister, and as a member of the Industrial Planning Council. Akawa died in 1967 at age 86 of acute gallbladder inflammation. Meanwhile, Mr. K had practically invented modern car advertising, rapidly increased the brand's popularity, and was responsible for a successful first outing for Nissan in motorsport. But his most important contributions to the company were yet to come. Nissan executives found Mr. K to be a disharmonizing force within the company, thanks to his sometimes unilateral decision-making and his unwillingness to conform to traditional Japanese business culture and quietly do his job. To shut up and dribble.
You literally gave him his own department and let him do something. Yeah. Like, what do you expect?
Yeah. He was invaluable, to be sure, but Nissan execs were eager to get him out of their hair. As a massive expansion abroad was underway, they came to a realization. If Mr. K could build the Datsun brand in Japan from essentially nothing, then he just might be able to do it again in America.
Yeah, of course he'll be
and
able to.
That's where we'll pick up next week. Woo. Mr. K takes Washington. When Datsun comes to America and becomes Nissan, probably eventually. We got some listener mail.
Yeah. Greetings from St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
Thoroughly enjoy Past Gas and have been listening, re-listening since the advent of the show. Love everything Donut does, especially Hilo, and enjoy rewatching Up to Speed and Wheelhouse. Keep it up. I'm sure you're inundated with the story ideas for Past Gas, but here's one more. Between August 1963 and November 1965, the world land speed record was set slash broken 9 times.
Whoa.
And 5 times over a 25-day period.
Whoa.
The record changed hands amongst 3 drivers. Tom Green.
What?
Yeah.
Tom Green?
My bum is on the Swedish.
Yeah.
Art Arfons and Craig Breedlove, who is the first driver to go 400/500/600 miles per hour. And I, for one, would love to hear it get the pass gas treatment. Thank you for all you do, John.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, that is a really good
especially
one.
Especially because, like, top speed records, to my knowledge, often last decades.
Mm-hmm. And for that to happen in 25 days is pretty
what
crazy.
What was going on in 1965?
Also, yeah. Breedlove is a dope name.
Breedlove is a sick
that's
name.
That's such a Game of Thrones name.
Don't search it on Pornhub.
Yeah, if you're already on Pornhub.
Unless you're in North Carolina and Texas where they banned themselves. It's funny.
Justin, thank you so much for being
on.
Hey,
happy to be here.
We always love having you on.
Yeah. Check in next week for part 2 of Dotson. I love you.
Bye.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.